episodes of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I give a shit. You know what? I gotta tell you something. I love summer. Do you? I feel like every day during the summer is a holiday, and it's just really hard for me to be in a bad mood during the summer, which probably means that I have one of those diseases where you need fake lights. I've tried those lights. They don't work for me. Anyway, thanks for listening. It's Dr. Lisa from Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. Radio Free Brooklyn is absolutely the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere. I've listened to all the stations. This is the best. What you should do is actually go and download our app. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone if you have an iPhone, or /Android if you have an Android. Because you know what? You can carry it around wherever you are. And we have so many great hosts and great music. Like, if you think your life is dull, you just get the app and it immediately turns into like this full color rain. People are going to have FOMO if you have the app. That's what I'm telling you. Okay. So I'm very excited about my guest, Portia Munson. We spoke a little bit on the phone before she got here. I'm looking at her right now. Hi, Portia.
Hi.
And I already told her that I was afraid that I was going to quell. I don't know if I did that Yiddish well, but so I did it over the phone so I didn't have to embarrass myself here or make a big deal about it. But anyway, she's an amazing artist. I mean, really, really incredible. And I first became aware of her work in 1994 at the Bad Girls show at the New Museum Marsha Tucker, the heyday of the New, that was like such a great era, right?
Yeah, Portia, it was amazing.
Fair, right?
Yeah.
It was a great time when Marsha Tucker was there and the museum had just kind of gotten started.
Yeah,
a bit, right?
She started the museum and she was just...
Yeah, like in 1986. Or something. Anyway, it was a great time and it was a great show. And Portia had this amazing exhibition piece in a group show called Bad Girls, which is still like kind of one of their, I think it's a class, it's probably in art history books. It's in art history books for sure, right? For sure. And a very important show. And Portia's piece like has always stuck with me. Like I remembered her name from 1994. So it was this elaborate, how big was it, Portia?
Well, the table, the Pink Project table was approximately 8 feet by 14 feet. So it was a really oversized dining room table.
Okay. Why don't you describe it? Because you'll do a better job than me.
Yeah. So it's a large table that's with a pink skirt, like a party skirt on the table, and a pink tablecloth, a vinyl pink, shiny powder pink tablecloth. And I, for years, had been collecting pink plastic objects up until then and continued after that. And so the table is completely covered with organized pink plastic objects. Like there's a comb section, a toothbrush section, hair clips. And I just arranged everything on the tabletop by category. And it kind of looks like a cityscape, but all out of pink plastic utilitarian objects.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you my experience that I still remember of seeing that project for the first time, which is, and this is 1994. So I walked in, I'd never seen anything like this. And it really, for me, took over that whole show. And well, Portia is describing it like there were combs, so many combs, but the combs ran from like a half inch in size doll combs to regular adult size combs, all in pink. And then there'd be an area of, I don't know, probably women's razors, or what else do you remember that you had a lot of?
There are lots of toys, like children's toys and dog toys, and Then there's also things like guns and sex toys. And I just collected anything that I found in pink plastic and just arranged them all.
Useful items and toy items, right?
Yeah.
Functional items, you know, that we use, women use.
But kind of throwaway sorts of things, like things that are not considered, you know, valuable.
Right. Yeah. So when I saw that, I just realized, like, how dumb being a girl is. That's all I can say. I mean, I kind of knew that, but I was like, wow, this is a really powerful statement on how society views women. And it really, like, there were so many things about it that stuck with me, that message, but also just the obsessiveness of the artist was, like, overwhelming. And it had so many levels to me, like society, what society makes, what we make for girls, what we make in, you can see it moved me. I mean, I'm just going to say that, right? Anyway, so Portia is, after, this is like, I never thought I would actually be sitting in the room with Portia. This is 1994, but I was fortunate enough to be able to see her, run into her and ask her. And I was amazed because she said yes right away to being on the show. So I had that really good fortune. But, and the show that I ran into her is still up and you can go see it. And it's just a really, really fabulous show that's up right now. And honestly, you know, I always like try to talk about that art is, you know, the art to me, having art accessible to you guys, you people that don't even give a shit about art maybe, or, you know, or music people, or maybe even art people. This stuff's really just accessible and fun and interesting and impactful. All of the work. Portia's piece is a star in this show, but you should all go see it. So it's at the Flag Art Foundation, which is on 545 West 25th Street. It's up through August 17th. The name of the show is Dime Store Alchemy, and it's curated by Jonathan Ryder and has so many great, very famous artists in it as well, like Sophie Call. We like her. Lots of people. Also, upstairs is another one of my famous artists, somebody who's actually been on the show before, Jennifer Gagnard. Did you get to meet her?
Genevieve, sorry. Yes, she's great.
She's lovely, right? Yeah. Did you know her work before?
A little bit. I wasn't super familiar with it, but I'm so glad to know her and know her work better. Her work, yeah. She's a really good artist.
Yeah. Really a young artist. Very young. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fabulous. So she's been on the show. You could listen. I talk with her. But anyway, so you should go see that show. And the show, let's just describe the piece that you have up in that show that people can see now. It's called the Pink, what is
Pink Project Bedroom. And so I started working on that and sort of showed an early version of it the same year as the Bad Girl show. And so it's basically a bedroom that's made out of everything, again, all this found pink stuff. So the walls are all prom dresses and women's lingerie that creates the wallpaper for the walls. And the ceiling is made from, you know, probably over 100 baby and adult onesies, pink onesies all sewn together. And I've left the arms hanging down. So they're strung up with ribbons, pink ribbons to the ceiling and hanging and covering the ceiling, making a onesie canopy over the room. And then there's a bed and a whole pink bedroom set. And the room is then just filled, layered on top of that with all this found pink stuff.
Right. So all that is Portia is describing, the experience of that for me is very much like what I was describing earlier about her pink project, except it's much like almost fuller because it's an entire immersive environment. And I can just tell you at the opening, it was like people were, you know, it felt like people were waiting in line, sort of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they waiting in line to see it? Yeah. So anyway, I can't say, I mean, this is like probably, and I really, honestly, probably the best show easily I've seen all year. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a writer, I'm not a professional art critic, but I just want to say that you guys would all like this. You know what else I'm thinking, Portia, right now? I have to give out a shout. I have a show up, and I have to give a shout out to my gallery.
Yeah.
Because I just got an Instagram notice that my gallerist, Jonathan Weisberg, Weissman, I'm like nervous, I'm on the radio, but so I'm getting his name wrong. So anyway, I have to give this a shout out because it's only fair, right?
Yeah,
and
of course.
And he's a great guy, and he worked really hard, and the show's great. It's at VSOP Gallery in Greenport, Long Island. And if you want to go to Greenport, or if you're anywhere near there, you guys should go see it because it's a really great gallery, and I'm proud of the work. Proud of the work.
Good.
I am. Okay, there. Hi, Jonathan. That's all I'm saying. So there are a bunch of things I feel like there's so many things that I want to talk to you about, Portia, as you know, because we spoke a little bit earlier. But some of the things that I find really interesting is, and I'm 62, and we're sort of in the same age range, right?
Yeah, 57.
Oh, you're 57. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we've been around the block, and so the thing is that I'm meeting Portia for the first time now, but I feel like I've known her in a certain way since 1994, since I have followed her career, and she is somebody who's really been at the forefront of feminism in art, as far as I'm concerned. And I am personally curious about, Portia, your views on feminism and how it's evolved over time, because, and I've said this on the show here before, is that I'm actually kind of disappointed about feminism, because I thought, like when I was in high school, things started changing, and I feel like they progressed for a while, but now I feel like with all these fake boobs and all this makeup and all this stuff, we've gone backwards. I want to know what you think, and I also want to tell you guys another thing, that Portia has been married for how many years?
Like 27 years.
27 years, and she has two children, a son who's...
24.
And a daughter who's 19. So she's, but you know what? Before we get into that, I'm going to interrupt myself and just get a little bit about your background and where you grew up so we can know where you're coming from.
Sure. I grew up on Long Island in Seacliff, which is on the North Shore in the township of Oyster Bay. And then I went to Cooper Union for art school. I moved into New York City in 1979 to start art school. Moved into East 6th Street and lived on the Lower East Side for years. And still, when I'm in the city, stay with a friend in that same neighborhood in what used to be an apartment of mine. And then I went to graduate school at Rutgers. Also spent a summer at Skowhegan. And after my son was born, when I was around 33, well, when I was like 35, actually, by the time I was 35, we basically moved full time up to the Catskills, and I've lived up in Catskill, New York, ever since then. And the place that I live in the Catskills was my great grandparents' house, so it's a place that I visited my whole life, and they had purchased it during the Depression in 1931 as a way to, for like $1,000 or something, the family pulled together and was able to buy it as a way to escape Brooklyn and grow their own food and, you know, live during the Depression up there.
Wow, that is so awesome.
Yeah.
So you went to Cooper Union, and Cooper Union, I mean, in order to get into Cooper Union, for those who don't know, that's like probably the most, in my mind, prestigious art school in America. Is it free again? It was scholarship only.
Yeah, it's not free right now, but they're working to get it free again. I think it's like half tuition. I think there was like some sort of big scam that went on, and you know, the school got ripped off, and so they've been having to charge tuition, but hopefully that's going to change pretty soon.
Yeah, we got to get that back. But anyway, yeah. Certainly when you went there, Portia, it was like the most prestigious, at least in my mind, art school in America. And probably still is. Because one of the things is the people that teach there, the artists, and it's actually known for engineering and architecture and art. And it's just got the best, literally the best teachers, and also it's all scholarships. So in order to get there, you must have known some shit. Like, were you, like, how did you, what was the role of art in your life growing up?
Well, I have sort of almost like a kind of a corny story about it, but I was just telling my kids recently how, I'm quite dyslexic and I always struggled with reading. And when I was in first grade, there was an amazing art teacher, and I had been put in the reading group with the kids who were immigrants who couldn't even speak English, kids from Russia and Mexico and different parts of the world. And so I was a terrible reader because I was in that reading group.
Because you couldn't see the words.
I don't know. So anyway, I loved art. And I remember thinking to myself at that young age, this is who I am. I'm an artist. I'm going to be an artist. And it was always clear to me. That's what I always did.
And were there any other creative people in your family? Like, were there any other art people?
Yeah, but my family was fairly conservative. But I think I just had a very supportive mother who, you know, maybe had unfortunately sort of found religion, and that steered her away from being an artist. Like, she had actually had received a scholarship to RISD, but instead went to a religious college.
Oh, bad move.
Bad move.
Did you think that? Do you think there's anything in that? Like, I'm going to resolve this shit?
Probably. I think
I think so, too. Were you kind of secretly disappointed?
In my mother?
Yeah, for not.
I think there are different things that I've always felt sort of, you know, sort of bad about for her, you know, that she, but on the other hand, she kind of embraced her life and was an amazing mother and also a teacher.
Religion's great. A lot. I mean, that can be really, you know, she got a lot out of that. I'm sure. Yeah. So did you have brothers or sisters?
Yes, I have two brothers. One is a helicopter pilot in the military.
Wow. Wow.
And my other brother is lives in New Hampshire and works for a home and garden center.
Oh, so he's also nature-y oriented?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you seem like you are innately obsessive. Is that true also? Like, there must be something in you.
Yeah, I would say that I am obsessive. I think maybe the way to describe it is I'm visually obsessive. Like, I really like thing. I'm very sensitive to, like, how the lights are, where the, how a room is arranged, like what, like all of those kind of things were always really important.
I shouldn't say this, but my husband does this. Like, he's also an artist. But he lines things up. Like, if we go out for drinks and he has like a glass and it's not perfectly on the napkin, he'll like rearrange it so it is. Do you do that? Maybe you'd be good with my husband. I'm kind of tired of him. He'd probably love you.
That's not exactly what I do, but I do relate to that. My house is quite full, especially my kitchen. I have a little pantry. I don't have cabinets. I just have like everything, so you can see everything. And so everything has its place, for sure. Very organized.
It is very organized.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So would you move in? Please, just move in with me. I need that. So, or I'd like, yeah, I want some advice on how to handle my husband. I want him to throw things, but I'll ask you later.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, there was something I forgot to mention that I wanted to let my listeners, hi guys, you got to know about this. So anyway, because this is a radio show, we are not going to have the time to really go through the magnitude of Portia's work. And I found this great video interview of her online. And if you look at it, you can also see her house and her work and her whole vibe. And her work is really broad. We're talking, she does a lot of work with nature and flowers and birds. And we're only talking about one aspect of her work. So if you go to Gorky's Granddaughter and you see the interview, which I will post on my Facebook page, by Zachary Keating, you can, like, do that, because you really, like, you'll like her work, and I think you should see more about it. Also, while we're at it, if you want to get in touch with Portia or know more about her, you go to Instagram, okay? That's P-O-R-T-I-A Munson, M-U-N-S-O-N, or PortiaMunson.com. Okay, I got that done. I got that out of the way. So anyway, you had said before that you were here I am. Here you are. I'm picturing you like in the Lower East Side in the heyday of Cooper Union with all the artists. Was that like unbelievable?
Yeah, it was a really exciting time to be there. I loved it.
Who were you friends with? You must have been friends with other well-known artists. Were you?
Well, I guess so. I mean, I knew a lot of really well-known artists.
So who would we know?
Well, I remember going to Keith Haring's loft. He would have sort of regular events there. And so I remember going there a couple of times, like seeing, you know, performance and bands. One time when I went there, Suicide, who at the time was one of my favorite bands, was playing. And then I remember Jean-Michel coming. He was...
Basquiat, that is, folks.
Yeah. He was dating one of my friends.
Basquiat? Your friend dated Basquiat?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he went out with lots of people.
You mean he was a slut?
I wouldn't know if I'd say it like that, but yeah.
Well, that's just me.
He liked
the ladies.
Yeah, he did.
And he was in a... charismatic guy.
He was
a charismatic,
really gorgeous, amazing man.
He didn't have a problem with chicks, so why not?
Right.
He wasn't scamming anybody.
Right.
Okay.
So I sort of knew him. He came to a party at my house, at my apartment on the Lower East Side, and it was just a happening time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember seeing Sean Penn and Madonna, like, in the neighborhood, like, you know, going to out clubbing and, mm-hmm. you know.
And how did you meet your husband?
We met at Rutgers University, Mason Gross, which is where I went to graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so he's an artist as well.
He is.
And
yeah.
What kind of work?
He does a whole range of work. Right now, he's just kind of blissing out up in the Catskills in his large... double blueberry spiral. So it's a botanical art, like a botanical earthwork that's covered in white netting, and it's just incredibly gorgeous, beautiful thing.
So you both have like studios, and
it sounds ideal.
But here's the thing. So here you were like totally living the life in the Lower East Side. So how did you get married and have two kids and move to the Catskills? What happened?
I don't know.
What happened? What were you thinking?
Yeah. Things just kind of happened. I think it was kind of a profound experience going to Skowhegan, which I went to between undergraduate and graduate school. And that's an incredible place for artists up in Maine. It's kind of like art camp for young artists.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were out in the country?
Out in the country with lots of other artists.
Because you grew up in a suburb, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
So was that when you first started like really being like working out in nature is great?
Yeah, I think I just realized that I just really loved the environment. The effect of nature on me seemed really important.
But you also said that you really always knew you wanted to be a mom. Right. So can you tell me about like that's another thing. And I think I told you this. That sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
Me personally. So where did your desire like how did you know you wanted to be a mom? What was that about?
I think that was really similar to being for me to knowing I was going to be an artist. It just always seemed like something that was part of who I was and what I was going to do. And so once I was in my early 30s, it just like it became just almost imperative, you mm-hmm. know, and my husband was much more ambivalent about having children, I think. And I mm-hmm. philosophically completely agreed with him that there are enough children in the world and that it made sense to not make sense to not have children. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't help myself. And I basically kind of.
Did you talk him into it?
Well, I kind of cried for like 2 years. Until it, you know, finally he was like, he felt like he couldn't be responsible for my like misery.
And was that before or after you got married?
After. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so what about your relationships with men? Because I'm going to say, you know what? I'm envious of you getting settled down so young. I mean, counter transference. Mm-hmm. So, did you, get along with men? Did you have like easy time having boyfriends, or what was that like? What was your dating life?
Yeah, I think I always,
had a boyfriend. That wasn't a non-issue for me.
Yeah, I didn't.
For you?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm identifying with you some way.
Yeah. But, and actually being, getting married and having kids in my early 30s, it didn't feel, I didn't feel like I was doing that young. Like I felt like I'd had a really full, mm-hmm. a whole lot of experience in my 20s, and my life felt really full. Mm-hmm. And it sort of just felt, it felt kind of like a natural flow.
So you don't seem like you try to do, like you, it doesn't seem in your nature that you would be somebody who would be like trying to appeal to men and stuff like that. Were you always like just solid about being who you are? And, or did you, because I'm thinking about it from the feminist point of view, and like, so being that I'm only a little older than you, like for me, I was still really worried about guys liking me. And I think that got in the way of me having, my insecurities clearly got in the way for me, getting in the way of having solid relationships. Did you, I'm wondering if you had like a good upbringing. Were you, did you have a good relationship with your parents? Was your father available emotionally and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty good relationship with my parents. I mean, like I said, they were kind of religious. And so, you know, once going off to art school and moving to the Lower East Side, you know, there definitely was a real sort of split in terms of my relationship with them and understanding about things. But because I was an artist and just seeing the world in a different way. I mean, I think that I was concerned about what I looked like and my style and like that, kind, you know, that's sort of normal when you're a young woman and, you know, still now. But right. But I think I always was really focused on my work in some, you know, in some way or another. So that was that, I always had that. Like, I feel like that was the kind of thing that kept me from ever, you know, getting too involved with drugs or other, you know, or, or like hanging out a lot at bars, or because I had work to do. So I just couldn't.
Did you make a lot of art at home on your own then?
I did. But in my 20s, I loved going out dancing. Like that was one of my favorite things. Like,
music and dancing.
Yeah, so, you know, that was the fun thing to do.
So what was I going to say? So when you clearly split off from your parents in a certain way.
Yes.
Now, were you like a good student?
Medium.
Did they, like, how did they feel when, you know, you ran off when you were leaving? You know, you lived a, you weren't in line with them. How were they?
Well, they thought I should go to like a fundamentalist Christian college.
Right.
That was their idea for me. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And I was just really clear that I wanted to go to an art school. And my father and my high school counselor just sort of, they didn't believe that I'd get in to those schools for some reason. I don't know why, but I did. I thought I would. And I got in everywhere I applied, including Cooper. So then once, and it was so exciting, on my 18th birthday, I got my acceptance to Cooper. And I was like,
wow, was that like one of the happiest days?
It was so great. It was kind of,
really,
it kind of felt like, yes, this is who I am.
Shining
this
with happiness, folks. Shining with happiness at the memory, I'm telling you.
Well, it was just kind of very affirmative. Like, yes, yeah. I really am an artist. This is what I'm going to do. So it was very exciting.
So how did your parents respond to that? Like, did you have to go through a rebellion to get away from them? Or were they like, okay, this is who you are and that's great, we're just going to support you? Or were they like, we don't understand what you're doing, this is...
So,
were they angry? Were they...
So, no, they were very supportive. And one of the nicest things that my father ever said to me was, we don't understand you, but we're very proud of you.
See, you go. There you go. That's exactly what I was looking for. So all you parents out there, that's the message. And then your kids will be successful just like Portia. Not somebody who's still trying to find themselves like me. That's okay, though. I'm fine with it. I own this. So let me just remind you, because it's one of the things I do have to do here, even though I can say the word fuck as many times as I want, I still have to let you know that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And it's Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm here with this fabulous artist, Portia Munson. If you're in the art world, you know who I mean. If not, you can go to my Facebook page and find out all that you want and need to know. And Portia did some very seminal work about feminism that affected me personally in the 90s. And we're talking about, I'm trying to find out what her views are on feminism. So we're getting there, folks. You know, my husband told me last week, he gave me a note that I have to sum up the first part in case people come in.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
Thanks, Phil. So anyway, so it sounds like your artwork really grounded you.
Yes.
And your obsessiveness about it,
yes,
maybe, and the fact, and how did the fact that you couldn't read play into that? Did it make you more focused on your work?
Yes.
That was really what your thing was. So you really like, that's really, really.
Well, it was a way for me to express my intelligence and for me to express how I was seeing the world and thinking about things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think our culture is kind of lopsided towards a certain praising and, respecting a certain kind of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I've kind of always been like, I don't know if struggle is the right word, but sort of trying to like express myself through my work. Yeah.
So you see the Pink Project as a feminist piece.
Yes.
Right. So feminism is obviously. So what was it like for you when you were like in Cooper Union or your young lady days? What was it like? What's your view of being treated as a woman in those days? Like, did you feel like you were treated? Do you feel like you weren't given? Like, were you respected? Were you respected? Did it get in your way?
I feel like I always turned it into something positive or helpful for me. So even making the pink work, because I started collecting pink. I was always collecting pink stuff, but really thinking about it as artwork when I was in Cooper Union. And I think that was being a little bit rebellious, to collecting that pink stuff. And because the instructors who I have were much more, I was studying with people like Vito Acconci or Hans Hacke, Barbara Kruger, Martha Roserich, different artists like that. And their work was much more kind of directly political and kind of colder. I mean, I think they were really, really
serious. Your work has humor.
Yeah, but I think they're really, all of them are really amazing, incredible artists. But I think that nobody was working with, you know, like pink plastic stuff in the way that I was. And so that was like a way to be kind of rebellious and also take this like girly thing and, you know, be sort of aggressive or like, you know, make something out of it.
And how do people respond to that kind of work?
When I first showed it in a big way, it was actually at Rutgers when I was in graduate school, and I got a positive response, but I was actually told that I shouldn't show it and that I should be showing my paintings. And and all someone has to do is tell me, don't do that. and then I do it.
so you were just like, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to show this work. Or did you question yourself, or like, did you feel that sounds so oppressive.
I think that someone, and it was the main person who did that was actually a woman teacher who I admire. It was kind of like, but I think that it was like, well, you can't really show paintings and this, and your paintings are really good, so you should show your paintings.
Uh-huh.
And I just sort of was like, no, I'm going to show both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know, it kind of just forced me to maybe believe more in myself and my own vision at the time.
So that was a marketing strategy, sounds like, from perhaps, which is, you know, not a bad thing for teachers to do. So, but, were you a girly girl? I mean, like, how did you wear makeup? This is what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah.
How girly were you?
Yeah.
Like, how much were, like, what, like, in other words, like, did you present in a way that you might have been the target of somebody disrespecting you because you're a woman? That's what I'm trying to matching.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, I definitely...
Mini skirts?
Got, yeah, I like to dress up and I like to wear makeup. And I was definitely a girly girl and got catcalls on the street and, you know, in those days. And was, but I didn't, I never had any horrible experiences personally, thankfully. So all of that stuff, you know, just, I don't know. I just, I think I always just felt kind of like sort of powerful and kind of good about who I was and liked dressing up. And, but I also must say that I think I have maybe a slight like little thing in my brain where I was just telling my brother this the other day, because I really have a hard time remembering negative things.
Oh, wow. Along with which way letters go. So, I love that.
So it's like hard for me to say exactly.
So you're pretty optimistic.
I'm pretty optimistic.
Oh, that's great. Fabulous. That's, I want your wiring.
Well, I just feel like this is it. Like, you know, this is where we are. I mean, I think the world is really fucked up. I guess I can say that, right? Just because of the...
Sure.
Just... you know, thinking about the, I mean, I feel like my work now is very environmental. I think of myself as an environmental feminist.
I do too.
And so I feel like there's so much going on with the environment that's really, really terrible.
Right.
But I also feel like we have to do whatever we can to create our own worlds and make our worlds as like amazing as possible.
Do you think that your parents having any, like having religious background kind of might have given you more of a perspective on like, spiritual, meaning like the value of life and how short life is, or can anything like that, or being positive, like optimistic, do you think that might have affected you?
I don't know. I feel like that more, the thing that I feel like I really learned from that is that there are so many different ways of seeing things and of seeing the world, and that it, I don't know how to articulate this correctly, but I feel like all of these organized religions that are, you know, believe in one God who's male, I think that those are very oppressive and that they're all very similar to each other, meaning Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. To me, they seem like very just different branches of the same kind of thing that's like this human, male, top-down kind of dominating thing. And there was something about, I don't know, I just growing up in that world that made me really like, see, this is like one specific view on the world. And it was actually very upsetting to me to like witness all these missionaries, because I would see that growing up, who would go out and trying to like change these indigenous peoples and bring the word of God to them. And that seemed, from a young age, I remember just being appalled, like, oh my God, they're so gorgeous. Like, why are we giving them our clothes and our ideas?
Right. Did you ever talk to your parents about that, or you didn't agree with them?
I didn't agree with them. And I knew that from the time I was in my teens, like that was really clear to me.
But you accepted them, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean,
that's cool.
You know,
no,
yeah.
That's probably smart. Yeah. No, that's good. And they accepted you. I mean, that's a testament to religion. For me. So I'm getting this picture that, you know, and we're talking about young women, because being a young woman is usually when you start, you know, defining some of your sexuality or your feminism, whatever crap you want to call it. So it sounds like that you were pretty solid always, just innately in who you are because of your relationship with your work, and you weren't too intimidated by guys or worrying about pleasing guys, even though you were, you know, fabulous babe.
Yeah. I mean,
does that make sense? What's the impression on
that? Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe one flaw that I had was that I was, you know, like, never went without being in a relationship. You know, I was never okay with just being alone, which I do admire in other friends who spent long periods of time without being in a tight relationship. So I think I always found a certain sort of like comfort, or like that was my good place to know that there was a solid other person.
You're good at that. You're good at the whole relationship thing. What was I going to say? Wait, there was another thought I had, and I just lost it. And now I'm on the radio, so getting it back is really, really awkward. So about that you liked being in relationships, and I think that so your job. That's what I was going to say. Like, did you ever have a? Did you ever have a regular job? Did you ever experience any kind of, you know?
Oh yeah. So
being at work like that.
Yeah. So what I would say about having a job and my advice kind of to people is if you really want to be an artist and do well at it, don't get too good at anything else. You know, because, you know, you have to, you
don't
want to.
Did you ever go like in an office or someplace where you had to like stand up for yourself as a woman? Like as an artist, you can say, well, I'm not going to take any shit off of men, and you can kind of get away with it. But in a workplace, I think it could be different. Did you, especially in our day?
Not really, although I definitely observed that working in my father's business.
What did your father do?
He had a medical laboratory on Long Island.
He was a medical scientist or a researcher?
Yeah, and he had kind of a laboratory where people would go, where you go to have your blood drawn, and, you know, where they do urine tests and like that kind of a laboratory. Wow. And so his partner, who was a kind of a sleazy guy like that, he wasn't ever directly bad to me, but I remember observing that and being really aware of that at a young age. Like, oh, those are the kind of people and the kinds of jobs you want to stay away from.
What was the first job you had out of college? Did you ever have it? I mean, you must have had a job.
Yeah, then. I didn't. I always had sort of like, I just always had found jobs, and I
like,
and
like
I did
clerk or waitress or
waitress. I was a terrible waitress. I definitely did that. I worked at in the bookstore at MoMA.
Oh, okay.
I also was a cab driver for a while.
Wow,
when I was a Cooper.
Really? Wow.
Like I did lots of.
Well, that's fucking feminist right there. So you were able to handle your. If you were a cab. That's a clear picture. Yeah. You were a cab driver.
Yeah.
That says it all, folks.
Yeah. So, and there were guys, actually, who were trying to pick me up, who I would be giving a ride to. Like, I remember that, like, even businessmen and stuff. And
You weren't afraid? What about that?
Oh, at the same time that I was a cab driver, when I first started driving a cab, I also took a self-defense class and learned, you know, different things like that. And I don't know. I wasn't so afraid.
Wow. You and Jerry Saltz have that in common, right? Wasn't
that
a cab driver?
I don't know. I didn't really know that. Maybe.
Anyway, the thing is that, so you sound like you were, you weren't vulnerable. I mean, I'm impressed. It sounds like you weren't vulnerable to some of the traps that, I'm going to say that we're two different people and, you know, whatever. But I mean, I think I felt really vulnerable as a female, like in certain, you know, at work and other, and in general, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, you sound like you were more grounded about being female than a lot of your peers.
Well, I also did this thing where I was house painting. So I worked for somebody who was an interior decorator, and she worked with Broadway Video. And so I started doing things like, you know, painting their offices and doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I branched out and had my own house painting painting business. So I did that a lot all through my 20s after school.
So you've never really followed a typical female path from beginning, but it doesn't sound like you kind of naturally fell into that. You weren't like trying to do that.
Yeah, cool. I was trying to be an artist always.
Yeah, no, but I mean, So it's interesting that that you weren't on, that it's an interesting place where it doesn't sound like you were directly experiencing like typical repression, like, you know, in an office or something. But then again, you weren't actually speaking out against it.
Well, I wouldn't have tried to get an office job because I'm terrible at like reading and writing.
Right.
So I was trying to find.
So what was your feeling? What was your feeling about men in those days as far as feminine? Did you feel like women were repressed or what did you feel like you were? Did you feel like other women were, but you weren't? Or how did you feel?
Yeah, it's, I mean...
Or did you just not think about it because you were doing your own thing?
Well, I did kind of think about it. I had a really close friend who ended up going into prostitution and in this sort of horrible way. And so I thought about it in relation to her and what happened to her. And I just knew I wanted to really steer clear of that kind of that whole sort of world. Mm-hmm. And I definitely was always aware of, you know, that there were men who definitely
tried to take advantage of women.
Yeah, who tried to take advantage of women and sort of got. So I was really aware of that. But I guess I just. Yeah. I don't know. I was
interesting.
Always,
so yeah. The woman that was that in high school or college?
The prostitute. Yeah.
I bet that must have had some real effect on you, I imagine.
It was very, very tragic. It was very tragic. And
did she have a drug or alcohol problem as well?
I think part of when she first got in, she didn't when she first started. But then she the guy who got her into it, his nickname was Kane. As in cocaine. So
right.
So, okay.
And having children, so what was like the roles as a mom and dad? So you're still, it sounds very happily married as far as the impression I'm getting, full stop and full on. And so what were the roles like being parents? Were you stuck with all the work or?
Well, I did have a hard time becoming a parent, being a mother, because I dealt with some postpartum depression after each one was born. So that was really hard and kind of tricky. And I think that a lot of the responsibility of being a mother, I really felt that, especially when the children were really young, you know, and was like, what did I get myself into? I mean, I love them, but it was like, you know, it was a lot of work. But my husband, who had been less reluctant about being a parent, was almost the more responsible, kind of amazing parent in terms of like always being there. He was always the one when they were growing up who would get up early and make them their breakfast and lunches and, you know, make sure they got on the bus or got to school. Like it was like a very good kind of partnership in that way. And then I would be more like, I'm more of a night person. I'd be up later and do the, you know, dinner and like that part of work all night in the studio.
Right.
So
it sounds like he's the kind of guy who was attracted to a strong woman and envisioned, and you know, it wasn't an issue. He envisioned, he's a pretty equal player.
Yeah. It felt like really equal. I mean, you know, everything, just like for everybody, you know, our life hasn't always been like this perfect fairy tale dream, but it hasn't been like that, but it's worked out. I think that we have a mutual respect and we've worked things out. I think having children is very, very trying on a relationship. But we got through it. We worked it out. And we both came from really different backgrounds. I mean, similar but different backgrounds. But it's like we found when we came together, it was like we realized we shared a lot of commonality in terms of our ideas about the world. And, you know, so that really sustained you. It's like philosophically being very in sync.
Right. It doesn't sound like you had to struggle through a lot of issues.
Right.
Like it sounded like things were, it sounds like you were, guys were on the same page to begin with, equality, you know?
Yeah.
Role wise.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And shout out to your husband. and especially, yeah, you should, there's a guy who should be like, I hope he's, well, you have two boys. So he's a good example.
Yeah. He's a really great example.
Mm-hmm. You have one boy?
I have a son.
You have a son and a daughter, I made up another son.
No, I was assuming you meant my husband and my son, like two guys in the family.
No. So your son is 24?
Yeah, he's 24.
What does he do?
He went to Hampshire College and he graduated a couple years ago, and he did architecture, environmental design, and he's kind of just interested in being outside and figuring out gardens and growing things. Mm-hmm. And so he's working for some friends of ours now, doing all different kinds of work, construction and also gardening and different things. I don't know if he knows exactly what he's doing, but he's going to do something.
He's got a direction.
Yeah, something having to do with.
And is your daughter's 19? Is she in college?
Yeah, she's a dancer. She goes to Cal Arts.
Oh, wow. And, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's neat. Does she have visual art interest as well?
Yeah, I would say both of my kids are definitely artists because it was kind of like the therapy for them. Anything goes wrong, I was always like, here's a piece of paper and a pencil, like draw, like, you know, that's how you work anything out. And that's sort of the way that I figure, you know.
So I was saying like how I think things have, you know, slipped back a lot because like in our day or my day anyway, you know, you weren't there was no pressure to wear makeup and bras and all that stuff. And now it seems like, women have gone the other way, and there's a lot more, like, I feel like women are sort of, there's a certain kind of hypocrisy in my mind because women, you know, we want Me Too, all this feminism, but then there's so much work that women are, that we put on ourselves to be appealing to men with, you know, makeup and, you know, fake tits and all that crap. Mm-hmm. So I see a certain amount of hypocrisy. Do you see some of that, or that we slid back? Do you see some of that?
I don't know if I exactly see it the same way. I kind of feel like maybe there's a certain amount of women wanting to just be pretty and do that kind of stuff for themselves, or even, you know, I mean, you see that even in like women relationships, you know, getting dressed up and wearing makeup and doing that sort of thing. So
yeah, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But I also see like a lot of, you know, like there's just seems like a lot of women, a lot of stuff that you just see women trying to, like even The Bachelor, those TV shows, and The Housewives, those TV shows all seem like a throwback.
They do. It's true. They do. And they seem very... there's something so artificial, you know, which is kind of sad.
But. So maybe you just are wonderfully optimistic and you can tune that shit out. And I focus on it. That's probably what it is. But I wanted to hear about your thoughts about all that stuff because you have a 19-year-old and you brought her up. So what is feminism and all that stuff look like now? What do you think? What's your take on it from your perspective as a mother of a 19-year-old?
Well, it feels like I think that there still is definitely a struggle for women. And I hope that with the Me Too thing, that it's going to make things easier for women and make it easier for women to say when things are not okay, to make it easier to just sort of, you know, express yourself or hold people accountable. I hope that with my daughter that she, I think that she's able to be sort of have her own style and just be very independent in like ideas around femininity. She's very feminine and very, she's actually a very pretty girl.
I have no doubt. And oh, I saw a picture of her.
Yeah.
Pink hair, right?
Yeah, but actually now she gorgeous. she has a shaved head.
Oh.
Which is, but
she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I somehow feel very optimistic in terms of like the power of women, like that women are just, you know, quite powerful. I think that's what I see in her, you know, and see in her friends too. From going and seeing, you know, I'm looking at her as a dancer and going and see lots of dances where that she's in a dance with lots of other people. And I just love the idea that so much of the dance that I see is so, you know, mixed in terms of men and women and races and sizes and like all these different things. And it just feels, I guess I'm just like chronically optimistic about this.
Well, that is, you know, that's really interesting because that's such a great place for inclusion is in dance. Like I never thought about that before because we always talk about like brown bodies, white bodies, black bodies. And when you put all those bodies together, then you really, that is like a really great way of saying it doesn't matter. We're looking at you as dancers, not as specific humans.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at you as a group. It must be. So I can see how that would actually make you feel optimistic.
Mm-hmm. And seeing the individual strength of everybody, like seeing everybody's different, mm-hmm. you know, abilities and strengths and, mm-hmm. you know.
So does she have boyfriends or had a boyfriend or what's that about? I mean, how's that gone? How is that?
Yeah, it's sometimes challenging a little bit as a parent how to help navigate that. And my advice to her is always, she's been in a couple of sort of longer term monogamous relationships, sort of similar to what I,
nice.
Which sort of similar to what I did. And I actually have been telling her that when you're young, it can be nice to not be so tied down. Like it can be nice to, you know, I mean, it's nice to have a regular partner, but it can right. also be really good to just give yourself to lots of different friends, you know, whoever.
Right. Because it sounds like that you've always been in a relationship and you can see both sides and you don't want her to miss out. You're
yeah,
projecting
exactly.
on her.
Right.
You are projecting
right,
on
right,
her.
Right,
that's
right.
fair. That's fair. But do you think that she's good at, I would imagine, do you see like her enforcing boundaries with guys and do you like the
yes.
guys and stuff like
yeah.
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So do you feel positive? Do you think, so I'm proposing that women... there's a lot of women that, you know, have gone backwards, but maybe from your point of view and knowing her and her friends, you don't see that.
I totally know what you mean, but
yeah.
I am definitely trying. I think I'm always trying to imagine like this positive future and like think that things are really getting better. And so, and I'm kind of seeing that too,
mm-hmm.
maybe because we don't know the future. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to imagine it in this really like good, going in a really good direction.
But I think also her being a dancer is just like the best way to be comfortable in one's body and feel good about it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Unless you're a ballet dancer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is probably the opposite.
Yeah.
Do you think so? Do you think that's partly... Do you think that's been helpful to her?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's been really nice, actually, for both of my kids, that idea of, because my son's also very athletic and more into like snowboarding, but he's a very athletic person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's really nice to just have that mm-hmm. real body awareness.
And were you athletic?
My family was. So I was sort of because I was part of my family.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, like, so, yeah. I think also, I mean, I've said this before. I think that people, especially for women that are interested, that are physically active, I think it does help you a lot emotionally.
Yes.
Especially growing up, developing
yes.
physically and a physical confidence
yeah.
and using your body is really helpful. So you...
And for me now, it's gardening, like mm-hmm. being in the garden all the time and outside, mm-hmm. like as much as I can this time of year is very mm-hmm. helpful for your mind.
Did you do family sports? Is your husband athletic or interested in sports?
A little bit, but...
Hiking, camping?
Yeah, a little.
You guys
a little,
go hiking?
A little.
Can you believe we only have like 2 minutes
I know,
left?
It's crazy.
How fast is this? I know. I want to make sure I get in all my reminders. See, this is... Porsche is amazing, so you should really... and the show is amazing. I want to make sure, I really sincerely hope that everybody gets out to see the show at the Flag Art Foundation at 545 West 25th Street. And it's up through August 17th. So please, please, please go to that. It's really great. And I also want to make sure that you check out Portia's work at PortiaMunson.com at Portia Munson on Instagram, because she's on Instagram a lot, or at PortiaMunson.com, and check out the interview that Zachary Keating did. Go to see my show at VSOP Gallery in Greenport. It's really, really good.
Can I just say one more quick thing? I also
sure.
want to just say that I'm represented by PPOW Gallery.
Oh, yes,
and
of course.
So you could also check it out on their website.
Oh, thank
PPOW
you.
Gallery.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So stay tuned and listen to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.com. And the next show is great with Elon Danziger. So don't hang up. Just hang out, okay? And you can always reach me at Dr. Lisa Levy SP. SP for self-proclaimed. That's Dr. Lisa Levy SP. Have a great